Is a real estate company and a war machine.
That's pretty much what any government is when you think about it, especially the classical configuration of government. Like, you go take over a territory, then you break it up for the people that are in your country to own the land and probably sell it to people.
No, it'd be cool is if we lived on a procedurally generated planet. So, like, in the regions that have already been developed, it's like expensive and you have to go through all the shit, but you could just like wander out and it would generate some new area for you to explore, like Minecraft.
I'm sure there's ways that you could go about that and get some random land in the middle of nowhere for pennies.
That's why I wish I lived like, I don't know, 1,000 years out from now, to where we're just like running around in a solar system and you can just like go find an asteroid and like park it on an asteroid and start building shit.
You can pretty much do that now.
Hard to get into space.
No, I'm not talking about space, but you can do the same sort of exploration outside of the country. The United States has a firm grip on like development laws and that sort of stuff. But I was reading in an Architectural Digest magazine out of all the places. This one designer was in Mexico looking for a place to develop or build a house to design and whatnot. And they found like this one really obscure, like it looked like an old building. They just kind of saw it over a fence and they figured out who owned it. And the guy's like, yeah, that's where we put our garbage. Like, wow. You can have it for like $5.
Wow. Yeah. I guess there's probably lots of places in Mexico that are just like fucking dirt that is ripe for the taking if you wanted to build something there. And then there's probably also like most of northern Canada is just uninhabitable wilderness, completely isolated from civilization. And it's like, not that it can't be lived in, it just hasn't been developed. So your nearest connection is just like a station 100 miles away from another station.
Dude, Google is trying to develop this like utopian place in Canada.
Really?
Yeah, they have this whole plan of this like a Marxist's wet dream.
What is it called?
Civilization. I can't remember what it's called.
I gotta look into that. That sounds interesting.
It is interesting.
I remember I was doing a report. Okay, I was taking an ethics course. And what it was you have to go out and find some remote part of the world, some remote place, and look into how communication companies have affected that place across these like five dimensions for measuring the ethical behavior of a company. And I was looking into this like remote station way the fuck out there in Canada, and I can't remember what it was called, but I started finding like all these old abandoned military research projects and stuff, and it was like a rabbit hole in of itself, and it was really funny.
There's my friend Brandon has a podcast. Any
Brandon Pollard?
No, Brandon Zemp. It's called the Block Ash Podcast. I guess this is becoming a little shout out about it's a cryptocurrency podcast. But he interviewed this one guy who I can't even remember what the thing he's called it is like some sort of, but it's like a libertarian commune down in Chile.
Interesting.
Where they've been developing like co-working spaces and just inviting people from around the world to go move down there. Yeah, we are recording.
Cool.
I saw you asking that with your fingers.
I was just wondering.
I'm trying to get sneakier with that so it just flows right in.
Yeah, I didn't even notice. We were just doing the sound check and then we were in it to win
mm-hmm.
it.
All right, introduce yourself, because I've had you on once, but didn't really publish it.
My name is Dalton.
Would you get closer to the microphone, please?
My name is Dalton. I've been a good friend of Lane's for a long time. We first started out going to school together and getting into fights, and then eventually started playing music together and been friends for a while. Helped him rearrange his life as he transitioned from living in a house to living in a van to having a painting studio and now to having a podcast in the painting studio.
Solid.
And I also make stuff. I do art. I do visual art. I draw comics. I record and write music. I like to make short films. Do animation. I'm a computer scientist. Like to program, make software, make video games, do 3D CGI. That's pretty much everything.
That's good repertoire. That's nice.
I'm getting better at the like concise lowdown of who I am. Getting a little bit better at that.
That's good. Everyone needs to have their like elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Because I've been developing that too, because I've been caught in some awkward conversations where people are like, oh, what do you do?
I know, it's terrifying. It's really scary.
I make art, and it's kind of this concept that I've been working on. Here, do you have 5 minutes? It doesn't really work out that way. People just want to hear it in a couple sentences.
But there's something really profound about being able to articulate yourself. And I guess it's more profound in the negative. Like, it says a lot if you can't articulate precisely who you are, what you do, what you're trying to accomplish. If you can't put that into words, that's probably a pretty loud signal that you don't have as you don't as clearly understand your direction or your motivations for being, which is bad.
Well, one of the biggest problems that I know I face, and probably most people our age, is there's a lot of possibilities out there. So it's like,
it's really scary.
You get stuck in this place where you're thinking, oh man, there's so many different cool things I could do with my life. Like, what do I want to do? But having that quick little elevator pitch isn't a damning thing. You're not stuck to that. You can do that for a year, 10 years, and be like, you know what? I'm going to be a poet. And do that for a little while. Now I'm going to start a business. I'm going to be an entrepreneur.
You start out with potential, right? You have potential to be anything, but you have to narrow that into something or else you never become anything. But when you narrow yourself to one thing and really develop that into a lifestyle and something marketable and something that you can build upon, what happens is from that unfolds new potential that you wouldn't have thought of. So when you're on the side of trying to like figure out vaguely what it is that you're doing, it seems like making any decision is just going to close off doors. That's like what it seems like. But really, the doors you're closing off are not as substantial as you think they are. What is substantial is the doors that open up once you like decide what you're going to be and then become something tangible and articulated.
Exactly. The real thing that screws you over is when you get mildly good at quite a few different things and then you see all the potentials from those different things and then you just sleep for 14 hours a night.
I feel attacked. I feel like I've been called out.
I'm not calling you out. I'm calling myself out, too. Happens to me all the time.
There's nothing wrong with having a lot of skills, though. There's this idea of being a polymath, and it used to really only apply to the sciences, but I think it's also branching out into like an even broader version of what it was, which was already someone with a really broad range of skills and knowledge to draw from. So a polymath is somebody that might know a lot of different obscure schools of thought in science and mathematics, and they can draw from those obscure things and connect them to attain new insight on something and make new realizations and discoveries. Yeah. And I think that is transforming in a way that also applies to like lots of different artistic skills, the ability to work in lots of different mediums to create like completely new forms of whatever.
I mean, there's the classics, Michelangelo, Goethe. I don't know if Michelangelo is a polymath. Leonardo da Vinci was.
Mm-hmm.
Goethe.
Leonardo da Vinci for sure, because it was so like cohesive between science and art with mm-hmm. him. Like he translated the two as a means of learning for himself. So like to take apart, he invented the autopsy. He was the person to like, the process of an autopsy. He was like the first person, like take apart a body and like draw all the different pieces that he could find and like try and build a anatomical taxonomy that way.
That was so weird back then. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking about that a while ago. They were digging up graves.
Mm-hmm. Sketch shit, dude.
Some sketchy.
That was some skits shit. That was skits.
Even, you know who Goethe is, right?
No, guy
who
wrote, I've heard of it.
Faust.
Oh, that guy. Okay. Yeah.
He was also, he discovered like some interesting bone in like a bird that corresponds with something in human anatomy or something like that. I'm probably completely off. But there is these interesting figures that just like they had their thing and then they were also discovering some pretty pivotal stuff on the side just because they like cutting shit open.
I think also now that we live in the information age, you can get access to master level education in whatever skill you want for free. So that also makes it so it's more common for people to have a high level of ability in lots of different things because you can just find a YouTube tutorial for whatever. Yeah, like paint like a master and there's just like a playlist on it on YouTube to teach you like to become as good of a painter as someone who goes to school for it and studies for a long time. Not that you will just by watching the video. You have to put in work, but if you put in work in the way structured by these sort of free courses that you can find, you can develop your abilities very rapidly. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah. It just takes a lot of personal motivation. Something that I don't have a ton of, unless it's working on motorcycle carburetors, in which case I'll get totally strung out for 2 days straight and not learn a thing.
Man, I gotta tell you about something. I was watching this thing on motivation the other day that was really cool. So they did this study where they took a bunch of kids and they had them do a test. And the test was like to solve these various puzzles. And they told everybody scored really high on them because that first test didn't matter. It was like a pseudo test. They scored really high on it, and then half the kids that took the test were told they scored really high because they were smart. The other half of the kids were told they scored really high because they were hard workers. And then they came back and did another iteration of tests where they did some tests that were really easy and some that were really hard for the same group of people. And the kids that were told they were smart spent less time doing hard puzzles and more time doing easy puzzles. Performed worse on average, and the people that were hard workers spent more time doing the hard puzzles and scored better, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
And when they were asked to like talk about it and evaluate the tests, the people that were told they were hard workers said that they enjoyed doing the puzzles and being able to solve them afterwards, and the people that were told they were smart said that they were frustrated with some of the puzzles and were just like getting angry because they couldn't solve them. Were saying these ones were too hard. And so with motivation, a big factor is how you evaluate the things you're encountering. Mm-hmm. Do you try and look for things outside of your control to explain them, or do you look inward? And this has to do with an idea called an internal versus external locus of control.
That reminds me of free will. Because there's a lot of stuff that basically says that we don't have free will because of deterministic things like that. Like if someone told you you're smart, then you may not work that hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. I want to believe that I have free will, but there's a lot of stuff that says, like, you kind of don't.
Yeah, well, then does the person that told you that you were smart or not, did they have free will to tell you that or not?
Probably not. Because there's a bunch of psychological and, like, just genetic predispositions that, like, kind of coerce, I guess, in a way, particular responses out of people. Do you know what I mean? Is that making any sense?
No, can you say that again?
To where, like, for example, what we were talking about before this and how political ideologies are mainly, like, personality determined. So, like, if you have a particular kind of personality, then you align yourself towards one particular political ideology more than another.
Mm-hmm.
And that same thing applies for, like, different... I mean, the personality traits apply to, like, different sort of things that you're going to say to people. But that got really... That applies. So someone, if you have a parent that's more likely to say, oh, you're a hard worker, then they're probably someone who values hard work
mm-hmm.
more. Ah, man, this is all so speculative. But let's just say that they value hardworking more than smartness, intelligence.
Well,
and the other side might value intelligence more than working hard. And then those things could subconsciously change a person and their behaviors because of the people around you having particular behaviors and social interactions and psychosocial propensities to do different things.
Let's try and look at it more ontologically.
What does that mean?
Pertaining to, like, real or physical phenomena rather than, like, speculative or psychological or subjective phenomena.
Mm.
So, like, somebody that values hard work, I don't... If your perspective is coming into it like you have to give a whole bunch of effort in order to get something done, or like you're of the mindset to not give up just because something is difficult, the value of the work that you do is going to be higher than somebody that believes themselves to just already have ability and might get frustrated or give up in the face of difficulty and try and blame other external factors. So there is, like, real value to somebody who works hard over somebody that thinks that their work is just of a higher value.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
So the value is actually tangible there. It isn't just like you can probably measure that.
Probably. I'm no scientist.
Neither am I.
I have a podcast. Let's go to the word of the week.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lane. I've had this word or phrase stuck in my head, and I kind of like having things stuck in my head that I don't know the meaning to. But if anyone wants to tell me what it means, I'll send you a sticker or something. Maybe a heart emoji. Ball fronds. I don't even know if that's a real word.
When you do the edit, are you gonna throw it up?
No, text? I'm not gonna edit this, really.
You should at least like write it in text so they can see how it's spelled.
Ball fronds?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how it's spelled. If I knew how it's spelled, then I would know the definition because then I would Google it. So where did this come from? I don't know. Shit just pops in my head, man.
Ball fronds.
Ball fronds. I feel like it's spelled BALLFRONDS. Fronds.
Have you heard about this show, Ball Fondlers Z9000 on Adult Swim?
That sounds extremely familiar. It's like Ball Fondlers
3000 or Ball Fondlers.
No. Didn't that stem off of... That's a Rick and Morty.
No, not Ball Fondlers. Device. Sorry, what is it? It's not Ball Fondlers. I fucked it up. It's Ball something. Ball Masters.
Ball Masters.
Ball Masters something. I don't know what
Dragon
the number
Ball?
Is.
Dragon Ball Masters?
Ball Masters with a Z.
Okay. What's it about?
It's about this kid. Well, first off, it's post-apocalyptic. So big war wiped everybody out. One dude survived the war, and he brought peace to the world by, like, creating this game that took all the military machinery from around the world and transformed it into, like, this game where you pilot these mechs and you have these balls that are sentient and you try and get the ball into the score zone to get the points and win. And so instead of fighting, everybody just plays this game and he's like the god of games. And the, yeah. There's like this kid that is really bad but wants to be the best, and he's on a team with the person that was the best but now she's a has-been, doesn't try anymore, but is still better than pretty much everybody. But she's like an alcoholic and a drunk and just like causes trouble and kind of is infamous and not really liked in the game, but is admittedly really good, and so takes this nobody team and helps them become popular and better. And the kid is like the anime protagonist, so once he gets into the game and gets going, he has like some bullshit ex machina, unlocks some secret that lets him be way the fuck better than everybody else.
Figures out how to go Super Saiyan.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really good. It's a good show, and it's got good animation.
I used to think about that as a kid. I was like, why don't they just settle all the world debates like through chess? It's like, yeah, let's have a war. Show up with your best chess player at the Pentagon, bitch. We're going to figure this out. Who's
That's not
best.
Good, because then Magnus Carlsen just is in control of the world.
Possibly. Possibly.
It and then also you've got death. Chess playing computers. So
is this Magnus Carlsen guy American?
No, he's I think he's from Sweden.
Oh,
pretty sure.
Interesting. Then Sweden would rule the world.
Yeah.
That'd be very interesting.
That would be interesting. I think he's Swedish. I'm not sure.
Probably. Sure. They got some weird stuff in the water, man. Those Swedes. I went to school with a Finnish guy. He was a Finnish Mormon.
I think at his most powerful, Magnus Carlsen was rated like 2,800 or 2,900.
I don't know on what scale that is.
A lot. Have you ever played
me in chess?
I guess
that's all I need to know. No.
I'm rated at 600.
Mm.
So he's like four. It would take like four. I would need to be four times better than I am now.
And or would it be exponential? Would it be exponential?
I don't know. According to what curve the scale is, I don't. I think it's a linear scale, okay. For the most part.
Okay. The more you know.
I need to get back into chess, though. There was a time where I was playing like 10 games a day, and I was getting pretty good, and I was up to like 800 ish. But then I stopped playing for a while and just dropped so fast in scale.
Dropped back down to 600.
Yeah. Really Oof. Bad. And it really hurt my ego when I got on the other day and played some games and just got fucking destroyed.
Yeah. I'm sorry for your ego, man.
I know. I am too.
And it's,
I want to believe that I'm good at every game I play.
Fair enough. I want to believe that too, but I'm just not. So, okay, last podcast I had Lucas Stovall on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was cool. Have you seen his photography lately?
No.
He's been doing a lot of photography, lots of film, and doing some, like, I don't know if it's double exposure, but he was talking about this process of exposing the film to, so he would, like, expose the film through a filter. And you can, while you're exposing it, like, put pieces of paper over it, and it'll basically expose lines onto the printed piece that you're making. From my very rudimentary understanding of darkroom stuff. Do you know anything about that? Anyways, that's not...
I know nothing about photography.
That's not what I was going to ask you about anyways, so that's okay. We were talking about how... In the age of information, like there's no really big movements. You know, like how in the 90s grunge just exploded out of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Or
the closest thing to that you can have now, like house
music came out of Chicago in the 80s. Can that happen nowadays?
It takes the form of memes now. Memetics is like the only thing that can have in it something really proportional to that. It seems like, at least in my opinion.
I was thinking that it was going to be something more of a smaller movement. So you have like an artist here or there that just pops out of nowhere that everyone's like, oh, wow, that's what I was thinking, basically.
Have I talked to you about the heat death of art?
No.
So this is a really interesting thing.
Sounds relevant.
You create art, you create movies, you create music, and the product that you produce that represents that piece of art stays there. So in a given year, X amount of music, paintings, movies, games, fashion, architecture, whatever, all of it, books written, a finite amount is created every year, but that stays there. And it can still be discovered and experienced the next year and the year after that. But as time mm-hmm. goes on, people are still making stuff all the time. So the volume of work to be experienced keeps increasing, but the amount of attention that can be given to the totality of that work doesn't increase at the same rate. So what happens is there's kind of like an entropy to the amount of attention that can be diverted to experiencing artworks and products. Mm-hmm. And eventually it's like, there's going to be it's probably already well past this point, but there's so much music that you're only ever going to be able to experience in your entire lifetime a very, very, very narrow slice of the total amount of music that gets created.
Is that the heat death is when it hits a point to where you can't experience it all?
Yeah. I mean, you already can't experience all the music. In one day, yeah, there's more audio uploaded to SoundCloud than a human could experience in their entire lifetime. In one day, more mm-hmm. audio gets uploaded to SoundCloud than you could ever possibly listen to. Which is crazy.
What about new genres, though? New genres of art, new genres of music.
I think it's the same
thing.
That
stuff doesn't...
Like, grunge is still out there, and people are still going to experience that for the first time over.
Yeah. No,
and so when
I'm
the new
about...
grunge comes out, it's going to be competing with all of the old genres that already exist as well.
Yeah, as did grunge back in the 90s.
Right, but 20 years ago, there were less genres and less representation of all the genres out there when mm-hmm. grunge happened.
Yeah,
and course. Before that, what was it, rock and roll? What did rock and roll have to compete with? Even
blues,
yet, R&B. Even yet fewer genres and yet fewer artists and products.
What I'm really getting at is vaporwave.
Vaporwave cuts through. Doesn't play by the same rules.
No, it doesn't. It's kind of a new thing. Except it's already expanded into so many different subgenres.
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Oof. It's pretty ridiculous, the vapor micro genres.
What is there off the top of your head? Can you name five?
Yeah, okay. So cloud rap, mall soft. That's two. There's gotta be more. let's see.
You don't even have to count them. I'll keep count. You can just rattle them off.
I'm debating now if synthwave is a subgenre of vaporwave, or if vaporwave is a subgenre of synthwave.
Vaporwave is a subgenre of synthwave. Synthwave has been around since like the 80s.
I thought so. Okay. That's really
There's
weird.
Like sludge wave. It's like telepath.
Ocean grunge.
Ocean.
I've never heard of telepath described as sludge wave.
Really?
That's good. I like that. Sludge wave. Because yeah. There's sludge rock, which I really like. Yeah. Ocean grunge was kind of a meme, but all of vaporwave is a meme, so fuck it.
That's true. Ocean grunge.
Cyberpunk? cyberpunk is kind of more broad because it doesn't have to just be music. But I yeah. think like the music of cyberpunk is now so intertwined with vaporwave at this point. I think like I think cyberpunk probably existed before vaporwave, but then vaporwave kind of consumed that sort of
It all starts
in the collective consciousness.
That all started with Blade Runner, pretty much. That's you get the neon aesthetics. You get did Brian Eno do the soundtrack for that?
No. What's the guy's name? Vangelis.
Vangelis. Okay. Vangelis. So Vangelis.
Dude,
the guy,
his music is good.
I've never heard of him.
Go listen to the album "The City" by Vangelis.
The City by Vangelis.
Good dude. Yeah, he makes good shit.
Well, that pretty much developed it. Science fiction was before that, but that was in the '80s when Blade Runner came out. And then you got real cyberpunk. That was the beginning of real cyberpunk.
It seems like
have
now
you seen Metropolis, the movie from like I want to say the '20s? It's like a German movie. Mm-mm. That's supposed to be one of the first science fiction movies.
Huh.
Or some people I think maybe consider it cyberpunk. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I've been told that I should see it a few times.
I like that now it seems like cyberpunk is getting really popular right now. There's lots of stuff coming out. Lots of games. One game in particular called Cyberpunk.
2077. With Keanu Reeves featured as an NPC.
I'm with it. I really like cyberpunk stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I think it's always been big. I mean, Blade Runner was big when it first came out. The Matrix, huge when it first came out. That's super cyberpunk.
It's about more
as cyberpunk as it gets.
Remembered some more vaporwave microgenres.
Go for it.
Future funk.
Oh.
Bubblegum bass.
I've been listening to Saint Pepsi.
Yeah, dude.
AKA Skylar Spence.
Young Bay.
That's a subgenre?
No, Young Bay is a artist who was pioneering future funk because he's been doing it for a long time. I opened for him at my very first show that I ever did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When was this?
It was my very first show. It was when I first started doing Polysemy stuff.
Oh.
In Portland.
Interesting.
I opened for him and some other guy.
Is he a Portland artist?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
He does a lot of shows now, alongside like Flamingosis and stuff.
I like Flamingosis. What makes future funk so fucking good? What is it?
It's dancey. It's catchy. The beats are really simple. You got like, Japanese dance music from the '80s and nineties.
Mm-hmm.
Getting sampled with modern synth stuff and modern beats. There's also New Disco.
New Disco's pretty good.
New Disco. Pretty much indistinguishable from future funk. Almost the same thing.
Probably get less bass slapping, less dunks.
Yeah.
You know that noise. It's a good one. It's a funk staple. I feel like it's kind of just it's old pop music repackaged as new pop music in its simplest form. I know that some people would really cringe to that because a lot of it's original.
Like, I would say like you have the like the pop artist as like a product of celebrity taken out of the music and you just have like some random dude on Bandcamp without a face.
Yeah.
Distributing the music rather than some like person who's trying to be an idol, which I think makes it a lot more bearable.
Probably.
Rather than having your Pitbulls and your Justin Biebers and your Rihannas and your
famous
whoever.
People still have Pitbulls?
Pitbull the artist.
Oh, Pitbull the artist.
The pop musician. Pitbull.
I'm sure some people have him too as a pet.
What's really funny is I can't get over this. He made a tweet that was like, if I was going to be a dog, I would be a Chihuahua. And then after getting like a lot of messages, he came back later. He was like, no, wait a minute.
I don't get it.
Because his name is Pitbull. you were doing what the kids call messing with me.
I was messing with you.
Well, that's fine.
I was going to say something. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. The filters and the reverb and the kind of modern processing that we can do really easily adds this really interesting layer to all the vaporwave and its malformed children. That's really appealing.
Yeah. I mean, now you can just take any song, slow it down, put reverb on it. It's a pretty solid joke.
Yeah, but it takes a little bit more than that to make it good.
Yeah, for sure. But there still is like a comedic appeal to doing that. I did that with Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit,
mm-hmm.
called It Smells Like Teen Aesthetic. It's my most popular YouTube video.
I've seen that.
No, that's not true. It's my most popular YouTube channel, or my most popular YouTube video on my newer channels. But when I was a kid, I made a animation about biogas in Flash when I was in the 8th grade, and that got an insane amount of views for no reason.
Nice. If anybody else listening to this anytime in the future has ever been in a Flash animation class in your 8th grade schooling career, please let me know. I'm trying to figure out if this is some phenomena strictly in our area.
Because
that was a weird class.
I don't think anybody else had like as much exposure to Flash animation as our school did. I don't know why our school was so into it, but it was awesome.
I don't know. Maybe the superintendent was super into Homestar Runner or something.
It was never actually as much of a thing as it portended to be. Because it was a animation and art tool, so you could make cartoons, infographics, interactive stuff. It had a programming language in it, so you could make games and you could make software, you could make web apps, you could make whole websites with Flash. So it was like this multimedia master toolkit. But now it's like not even a thing anymore.
Yeah, it sounds useful, but it died.
Mm-hmm. I think it was like too much and not robust enough. It never got like robust enough to really be able to do the things that it was marketed to do elegantly, or just nobody wanted to develop those skills.
Mm.
And like the most useful thing to develop was just animation chops and getting good at animation. But then it was phased out to be replaced by better animation tools.
Too much potential and not enough mastery.
Yeah.
What we were talking about earlier.
You weren't ever seeing people that were building websites with Flash, even though you could, and there were like examples of it. It wasn't ever being done practically because it was so much easier to build a website using Dreamweaver or Bootstrap. And at some point in time, Ruby on Rails happened, which completely changed the game and took web design in a totally new direction. And it's way better to build a web app using Ruby on Rails or Heroku or whatever you want to use. Any of the modern tools are now so much better than what we thought web design was ever going to be capable of.
Yeah. Wouldn't a website run super heavy with Flash animation?
Yeah. It'd be slow as shit.
It'd break your computer, man.
Be slow as shit. I don't even really understand it because modern web browsers now have what's called a Java virtual machine built into them that most web apps interact with. And you have to have like extra stuff to support Flash now. And Chrome is completely discontinuing Flash support. There were some plugins that you could get for it to still be able to run Flash and load a Flash animation. And now I'm getting these alerts that saying, hey, in a few months, no more Flash. Done.
We're cutting you off.
But that's just Google Chrome. Mozilla Firefox still supports it.
Yeah, Firefox, I'm sure, will always support it. But Firefox is slow.
Because it supports Flash. It's got all the Flash.
Because it's
got all these Flash shits. All this Flash shit.
It's got running. Much better security. Brave browser is pretty good. Have you downloaded that yet? Everyone should download Brave Browser.
Everyone?
Yeah. Yeah, you can take back your ad revenue generation capabilities.
What do you mean?
They're using it in... so they've developed a blockchain application that runs with the browser itself. And certain ads that are privacy respecting, quote unquote, from what they say on their information page, will pop up on your browser because they have a really strong ad blocker too. I just run the ad blocker. It blocks everything. But if you wish to watch ads, then these ads that, I don't know, maybe sign up for some affiliate program or have certain qualifications will show up, and then you get a cut of the revenue that's generated from you viewing ads.
Really?
Each time. Yeah, and it's sent to
your... That's crazy.
It's sent to a wallet that's built into there with a particular token that's built off of the Ethereum blockchain.
Do you have to sign up for that when you... Is that like the same thing as signing up for a Google account when you download Chrome?
Probably a little bit easier. It just runs... It's got a little... application thing. What are those called when they run? It's like a little plugin that runs at the top by the browser bar, and you just click on that Brave Rewards button and you can turn it on or off. I think they finally finished all of the back end work or whatever they had to do to get it going. I've just never turned it on. There's been a lot of movements. I even downloaded an application called like My 31 or something like that, and it was an application that you could fill out the forms that they have on there to basically request some of the revenue that you, your information that gets on the internet bought and sold by people that are into big data and companies that do that, you'll get a cut of that money because you declare your intent to own your own data.
I tell you about the timekeeping app that I was developing?
Yeah.
The free time app?
You interviewed me for that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The marketing strategy we were using is like, take back your data. Because what a lot of products that are free to use, typically that operate in this sort of social network context, collect data on their users and then sell packets of data to companies and advertisers. And that's how they make their profit. Mm-hmm. And so we were like saying, that's happening. Why not use that to your advantage and allow this app to collect your data and give you suggestions on how to improve your life, expand your hobbies, and fill your time with more useful things to do, as well as just general time management. And we were going to make money by collecting data and selling it to advertisers, but like spin it in a way to where we were upfront about it and try and get people stoked about it. Basically just lying.
Wow.
Because like it's the same business model of just collecting data on people and selling it, but then like saying, hey, take it back, use it for you, even though that's like kind of bullshit.
Double speak, man.
Double speak.
You could just have people pay for it and then keep their data only for them and not have to sell it. Although I'm pretty sure that's very tempting as a company with a lot of data on people to sell it because people want it.
But then if it finds people really don't like to hear that their data is being collected and being sold. And so when that finds out, you get in a lot of trouble.
No, and people are only going to become more and more aware of that.
Mm-hmm. When we were collecting, when we were doing research on people and doing those interviews, beforehand we thought that no one would want to pay for it, and so that would be our only revenue stream. But when we were doing the interviews, we found that people were really into the idea of it being like a subscription thing where you pay like monthly or yearly to use it, just a little bit. So that was kind of a surprise. So where maybe we could do a freemium business model and not have to do that and still be able to make money, or do both and make a shitload of money.
I think people are coming around a lot more to the realization that unless you want to be the product, like you got to pay for stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise your privacy is probably going to be
And it's not like this is a new thing. People have been collecting data on their user base for years. I mean, before it was with magazine subscriptions, and now it's with whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Your phone conversations that get recorded. Well,
and even I remember I got sucked into this one because it was free money. this sounds bad. So yeah, I was in a Ponzi scheme. So I was in a Ponzi scheme once.
It's a Ponzi scheme.
I don't know what a Ponzi scheme is, though. Like a pyramid scheme, maybe. I wasn't actually. No, I take that was a joke. That was a joke. I forget the name of the organization, but they're the company that collects data on like what TV shows people are watching or what radio stations people are listening to. And they sent me a letter one day with a dollar in it. One crisp, clean, real dollar bill in a nice envelope. It was very enticing. And they said,
that's bizarre.
And they said, hey,
weird.
Send us, but it's a reputable company. I've heard the name before because they're just a huge company. They've been doing this since like since TV first came out in the 50s. But they sent me that dollar and they're like, hey, fill out this form. We'll send you $5 in the next envelope. I was like, hey, shit, why not? It'll take me 30 seconds to fill out this form. It's like, what FM radio stations do you listen to? It was super easy for me because I don't watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, what TV stations do you watch? It's like, none. Stream Netflix occasionally. And I put one radio station down, one FM radio station down that I listen to. Sent it off. Got a thank you letter back with $5.
Nice. So but $6 kind of, total?
$6.
Just for nothing?
For a couple minutes of work.
Some info.
Yeah. But that says how much money they must make off of that information that they collect just off of TV shows. It's a lot of money they're sending out to people. $6 a pop? They're probably sending that out to, I don't know. Do you think they'd send, not like 100,000 people. They probably have a select.
Kind of takes a lot.
10,000 in each age bracket. So 50,000 people that they're sending to, maybe $6 out a piece.
Well, they would only send the $5 out to the people that respond. So you would have to send, if you sent out 10,000 letters, that's 10,000 $1 bills. But then only a fraction of that are going to respond in a way that you would have to send out the $5 bills. But it's still a lot of money if you're operating in a at all useful sample size.
Yeah.
What's really fucked up is, I don't know why I got reminded of this, but way back in the day when broadcast television was getting started, it was a lot less regulated and you could do subliminal marketing. So like during shows or during whatever, you could just play like a fraction of a second of a frame of like some product and just fucking hypnotize people into like craving Coca-Cola or popcorn or whatever the fuck you wanted to sell. Yeah. And it was disturbingly effective. And they were like, hey, don't do that anymore. So now it's super illegal to do that.
Yeah.
But for a long time, you could just do that. And people were just watching the tube and getting brainwashed into craving products.
Yeah.
How messed up is that?
I mean, I want to say that it's really messed up, but I also know that it happens a lot and it still happens. Like all of the psychological engineering on social media sites to keep you on there longer because of the colors and the way that you scroll. Like you scroll down on every application because that's what's most pleasing to you to look through random stuff.
See that little two up there?
In the corner?
Yeah, for my messages.
Yeah.
The little alert, that little red flashing light that lets you say, hey, messages. I don't actually have any messages. I do not have any new messages. Oh, but it'll just come up there to get me to click on it, so I'm spending time in the app.
I get that too.
It's like it's little shit like that, the little dopamine feedback loops that make you addicted to the product. They make you addicted chemically, psychologically addicted to the product that you're using, to the app.
Your phones are bad.
It's really fucked up.
And there's a really high correlation between people getting phones before the age of 13 and like depression and suicide.
Yeah, so, I believe it.
And
because
with
your dopamine circuitry gets so, it fires so rapidly and so constantly that it, what's the term? You get desensitized to your own neurochemistry and your brain isn't able to function the way it's supposed to properly.
Probably. And then there's also a lot of negative social reactions that you get. Like, I post my artwork on every once in a while on, like, Reddit or something like that. Never gets any attention. I'm sure I've never even tried to, like, hack the algorithm in there and figure out how to, like, get my stuff popped up on the feed. But it's depressing when you like it, when you're like, oh, I spent so much time making this piece of artwork. I'm going to put it up and people are going to like it. And then you have a 2 karma score.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh. That's why it's better to just try and not do it for that.
Yeah, you can't. You can't do that for that. But then every once in a while you hear about the one person that's like, yeah, I just randomly posted this artwork on this thread and I was just because I felt like it, and then everybody loved it and it totally like sparked my career, and
yeah,
now
I
can do that full time.
Yeah, he can go suck a dick.
And then it's like the lottery. It's like rolling the dice. Man, am I going to get a career out of this post? No!
I think it's really bad because I know so many people where that is so deeply ingrained into the way that they think, to where everything that they're doing is interpreted as, how can I make a post out of this? How can I use this to get likes,
mm-hmm,
and views and followers and thumbs up? And it's kind of, it's disgusting to me to hang around people that act that way.
Yeah. I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I can also see the other side of it, because there is real world benefit that comes out of like growing a social media audience and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like even my Bend Canvas business, stretching canvas and building panels for artists, that's all off of Instagram, and yeah, it does all right. It's a side business.
But I think you have some idea of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
I still can't pronounce that word properly.
Entrepreneurship.
Entrepreneurship. So, and I think that's a little bit different, because that's like the same kind of mindset as like if you had a storefront, trying to arrange your storefront in a way that would attract customers. You know, it's a little bit different than like a purely ego driven thing.
Yeah. I mean,
because I know lots of people, I know people that are also doing it that are trying to start a business. You're doing Bend Canvas and that was really successful, and you were able to get pretty much all of your clients through social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Grant is trying to do the same thing with his film career. It hasn't been as successful, but he has, like, film now, if you're wanting to be an independent director, you can't not have an online portfolio of your work that you're doing.
Yeah. You almost can't have an online portfolio for basically anything, especially media related. If you're doing anything media related, media or artwork, video, all of that sort of stuff. Like, you got to have a social media outlet. You don't have to, but it can do a lot of good for you.
The people that are going to give you, if you're wanting to become a director like Grant is, the people that are going to give you jobs and get you work are going to be looking for your social media pull.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what it is you're trying to do, the necessity of a social media portfolio related to your work, it has a variable degree of necessity.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like a social score. It's kind of like asking how many people do you know, that sort of thing. Because if you have, I've always kind of thought of it this way, like if you have 1 million followers that are real people and not just bought like cell phone farms in Malaysia where someone's got 1 million cell phones on a board and they're all following you with different accounts. If it's 1 million real people that follow you, you'll sell artwork just because of the exposure you have there.
Yeah.
And that's why so many, you see so many people on YouTube that
have.
That's
why post engagement became such a massive metric, is because before that, when it was just likes and that was the only metric, you could game the system so hard in the early days by buying a like farm.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And I wonder how many like early paragons of influencer culture were able to make shitloads of money by exploiting marketing tactics on social networks by using like farms.
Probably quite a few.
Probably a lot. There's not something you can really do anymore now.
There's a book called Guerrilla Marketing that someone recommended to me. My Uber driver once recommended
that. Yeah, you were telling me about that.
I've been meaning to read it, but it's kind of like that. He was telling me how he started a bakery. And what he would do is he would make Facebook posts and tag other bakeries in the area in them. So that would pop up on their Facebook feed. And then he was like siphoning out their clients.
Oh my God. That's so clever.
And it did really well.
I like shit like that. I like shit like that. That's so funny.
It's
that's
smart.
Awesome.
I don't. People get very savvy to your techniques quickly, though. So every time you stumble upon something like that, your time's limited. You got like a couple years before people are like, "Oh, someone's pulling that trick again."
Do you know
again.
About the Soldier Boy?
The Soldier Boy, tell him.
Yeah, his technique. Oh my God, this dude Soldier Boy is a genius. You have no idea how smart this dude was. Okay, LimeWire was a new thing. It was the new hot thing.
Mm-hmm.
Could go on a LimeWire, infinite free music, right?
I did it.
Soulja Boy would go on to Billboard 500 and get the top 500 pop songs, and he would upload MP3 files of his own song, Soulja Boy Tell Him or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Superman, oh, you, whatever that song is.
I don't know.
I can't remember the name of it, but he would upload his music. But the MP3 file would be titled whatever new Beyonce, Kanye West, Taylor Swift song was the most popular song of that week.
Yeah.
And so everybody would search to download the most popular songs, but they would actually be downloading Soulja Boy. And they'd hear it, and it was not the song they wanted, but they'd go, oh, this is actually cool, though. I have no idea what the fuck this is. Yeah. Soulja Boy? Sick.
Have you heard anything more about the Soldier Pods and his Soldier game
console?
Yeah,
I think he's in like federal prison now or something. I don't know. He might have fled the country.
Oh my God. You probably can't pull those same tactics if you're actually well known.
No, probably not.
Because, yeah, people be like, hey, we know you got money.
All right.
Can't be pulling shenanigans.
Fortunately, I'm running out of time.
Yeah, you are running out of time.
Gonna have to wrap it up.
We'll have to wrap it up. We've been recording for 57 minutes, 50 seconds, 52 seconds.
Nice. Just about a solid hour.
Just about a solid hour.
I'm going to take off.
All right. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Later. See you later, everybody. Later, everybody. Later, everybody. Later, everybody. Later, everybody. Later, everybody. Later, everybody.